Welcome to episode number 32 of the Inside Running Podcast. Thanks for joining us again. Welcome to Bradley and Julian. How are we going, fellas?
Yep, ticking along, my friend.
Bradley, doing how are you going?
Yeah, had a long weekend, but I was under the pump with schoolwork, so I don't feel like I've had much of a long weekend.
Oh, tell me about it, mate. We've been slaving away on laptops all weekend, I reckon.
Yeah, had 80 maths papers to mark, and I've got about 175 reports to write.
Oh, geez, tough teaching high school. Meanwhile, yeah. Moose has been up in the Gold Coast just working on his tan. Wish I owned a shoe store.
There was not a single minute of sun while I was there, and I don't think I enjoyed a single minute of the time that I was there either. That's a lie. I had some friends. I had some good time up there with friends, but what a shithole the Gold Coast is, seriously. Who would go there for a holiday?
Yeah, half of Australia goes there for a holiday. What are you talking about? It's like the tourist destination of Australia.
There's a lot of, there's a lot of Brad Croker's getting around there, neck tats, Fox hoodies, DC shoes. There's a lot of that sort of culture floating around. I couldn't wait to get out of there.
I actually don't own any of that.
Apologies to any Gold Coast listeners we've got out there. Good way to start the show. I'm in it in.
Runaway Bay could be the worst place in Australia.
I thought that was a classy bit of the Gold Coast. That's where you do the turnaround at the half marathon point.
Is it?
Yeah, you run out to Runaway Bay and do a Yui over those canals and stuff.
Yeah, it's very flat and it's very concrete.
Mm. They love those tracks along the beach there.
Yeah, there's no like culture or I think I made a comment that I didn't feel like that to Mike Spray, Patreon, Launceston man, I said, mate, this place doesn't have a soul. And he said, agreed. Launceston, Ballarat, very soulful places. This place, nothing. Retirees, a lot of concrete, no local small business. It's all like franchises and cheap, nasty feel about it. I didn't like it.
Let's give our sponsor a plug a bit later on and let's continue on this thread. So maybe explain what you were doing there. I think you talked about at the end of last week's show, but if you're going to bag it out so much, why'd you guys go there for this yearly conference?
Yeah, well, pretty much piggyback off another big chain of stores that have a conference. So everyone's in the one spot earlier in the week and we kind of jump on the back of it and see all the brands are up there anyway for that conference, the Athlete's Foot. So we just jump up, come in after them, talk a little bit more technical maybe and a little bit more, I guess it's a smaller feel, our conference, because there's 9 stores of the running company around Australia and we all know each other quite well and we all have a good time. We're all friends. So we all get a house, just every store owner staying in the same house. It's actually really fun. So the conference bit was all right. We see all the shoes for 2019 first half from the brands. What they do is they try to explain the shoe, like any changes, any updates, and we judge and value the shoe and we justify its place on our wall in the store. And that's what we do. We sit around and talk shoes.
Yeah, right. Very good. And can you give away any kind of exclusive details about any things you saw up there?
Oh, it's probably a little early for that. I can't, there's a bit of confidentiality about it because it's so early. I can tell you, though.
Are you excited?
Oh, there are some things that I'm very excited about. If you are looking to be a faster runner in Ballarat, you're in luck. Put it that way.
Decode that message, Bradley. What do you reckon he's talking about?
No idea.
Oh, anyway.
I know the Garmin measures short in Ballarat. I don't know.
Yeah. I'll tell you this. Nike are coming hard with some pure fire. That is... that's enough. I won't give anything else away apart from Nike plus heat
Hey Brady, I get the feeling that this guy loves shoes.
Yeah, I wonder, how do you go up there surrounded by, like, everyone knows you don't really like being around people. How did you go living in a house and at this kind of conference for 6 days?
Oh, I just get super obnoxious, and those that can't handle it, we don't get along. And those, pretty much everyone appreciates and understands the kind of Asperger type personality that I have, and they tolerate it.
Very good. Sounds very supportive. Just on that note, though, I got a listener question I'm throwing in super early here, because I got it from a mate during the week, an old housemate actually, Richard Ogilvie. He's going to probably have a good crack at Melbourne Marathon this year, but he sent a message through to me, and he was asking about the athlete's foot actually, and was wondering about my thoughts on their foot scans, and I've got absolutely no idea, so I sent it through to you, and maybe do you want to share your answer with the listeners?
No, let's. You asked me a second question after this, I'm sure of it, because I'm not going to get personal with it, but I'm gonna answer it like this. If you take a knowledgeable expert in their field, it doesn't matter the type of store or setting they're in, they're going to provide expert knowledge. Okay, so I would feel like if I went to and worked in a Rebel Sport or an Athlete's Foot or a local independent retailer or a running company, that I could provide expert knowledge on shoe fitting. It's not the little gimmick or toys that you have in store that provide the advice. It's the person that you're talking to. So if you have this whiz-bang sports science center, right, if you're into physiology, and you get someone in there who only works in sports physiology one day per week and have never been, I guess, interested in shoes, or let's say interested in sports science, they're there because they need a weekend job. It doesn't matter what they have in front of their hands, the toys, whatever. You're going to get poor advice and you're going to get inexperienced service. So the way that the foot scanner picks up pressure on a mat, it maps pressure as you walk across, and the way that other stores do it is through maybe discussing what someone requires, asking them what they need. The way that I feel like a shoe should be sold, or that a shoe fitting should go, is using a lot of history. So a real discussion about someone's footwear history, someone's injury history, their training goals, then having a look at their foot shape, having a look at their foot mechanics through a gait analysis, hearing and listening to how they're feeling in certain shoes, observing how they're running in certain shoes, and through not just one of these factors, but a whole combination, and using your common sense and listening to the customer and the athlete, that's how you come across the right shoe, rather than having someone step on a mat and the computer spitting out like suggestions to try. Also, you have to look at the motivation for someone to sell you a product. And in certain chains around the country, there's incentive-based selling. So when someone brings a shoe out for you to try on, and that they're attempting to sell you that shoe, you've got to question the reason behind that and what that particular salesperson will get out of you buying that shoe, because it's very prevalent in the industry that there's incentive-based, there's incentives for the sales of certain shoes. So I can guarantee that at like a local retailer, not even just the running company. I know that I can guarantee the running company won't, but there is no incentive-based selling where we want to put a shoe on your foot for our benefit, whether it's some sort of kickback in terms of discounts off other shoes or free shoes if you clock a number of sales. That's not what we do, and that's what other retailers do. So just be really cautious when you go into a retailer that's a big brand like that. I always I always want people to go into to local business, expert, you get more expert knowledge, go into a running specialty store, discuss your needs, question why someone's bringing a certain shoe out for you, have them explain the reasons behind it, because if they can't explain that, then you're in trouble.
Yeah, well said, beautiful. I've learned more about shoe sales in the last 4 minutes, Brad, than I have in the last 30 years, I reckon.
As I said, he loves shoes.
He knows his stuff. Hey, let's, before we get to your running week, let's thank this week's sponsors, Runners Tribe. We spoke about them last week, but their new biannual magazine's coming out real soon. We put a video on our Facebook, actually, and if you watch that, you'll get a bit of a sneak peek of what's inside there. Some pretty amazing stuff, some good features, and yeah, that 200-page limited edition magazine is ready for purchase. Good teaming up with Athletics Australia, and yeah, if you want to read Brad and I's name, feel free to get yourself a copy.
Are there photos?
There's not a photos of Brad and I, but there's photos of other elite athletes in there. But yeah, unfortunately, Brad and I didn't make the cut in the photos department.
Other elite athletes?
Yeah, it's a magazine for elite athletes, juniors through to seniors.
Oh, okay.
Sounds like a Berlin challenge.
Well, he's battling. Let's get on to his week now. He's telling me how old he's feeling. He's not sure about this winter. So what have you done running-wise these last 7 days?
I've gradually progressed like a smart athlete does. Lots of easy running. Pretty much just jogged every day for a certain amount of kilometres. First one was 12. Second one was 14. Doubled on the next day. Next day, 20K all up. Day after, 19, 22. And then went on a long run around the Gold Coast. Just had this, like I had my phone with me. I went out pretty early, jogged from the house about 2 minutes later, ended up in like a procession of other runners with bibs on. I thought, oh shit, I've run into a fun run here. And so I'm looking around, no one's really exerting themselves too much. I thought, oh, what is this? This is a strange event. Like, these guys should be working hard, you'd think. But then I saw the first direction, like, arrow, and it was on a, the logo attached was the Gold Coast 100 Kilometre Festival. So I jogged out into the 100 Kilometre Gold Coast race, which is a pretty, that's going on forever, that race, I reckon. A lot of people have run that. And so I was running along next to the 100Kers, feeling pretty good, knowing that they had to do a five. I think the lap they did was about 5 or 6K or something. It wasn't very long. And so they were doing that like 20 times. I spent a little bit of time there but couldn't get my head around that. So I jogged off, saw this massive big green area on the map. And this is another reason why I didn't like the Gold Coast. So I decided I'd head around on a loop, cut in through the green section and get back home. But the entire way around the park, like this is a wetlands area. I thought there would be trails through, like one of the only green areas in the whole Gold Coast. They might put trails in. There's an 8-foot fence that goes around the whole park. So I went from wanting to run about 20 kilometres to running 28 kilometres. Nearly getting late for checkout, foot getting sore, just like the worst run of my life on a concrete footpath the whole way. By the time I got back, I thought I was going to draft a letter to the council suggesting that they
instead maybe, just slag them off in episode 32 of the Inside Running Podcast.
Yeah, that's right. It'll get back to them, I'm sure. Wasn't Ron Clark or something the mayor of the Gold Coast?
Yeah, at one stage. Why'd you stop so many times? Just looking at your Strava, like it was a 2-hour run. Yeah. You're out there for 2 hours and 18 minutes.
I was looking at my map. So I had to stop, work out where I was, zoom in, and yuck. Then my phone got so much sweat on it that it wouldn't open. So I had no idea where I was going. I ended up running in the bike lane on the Gold Coast Highway, like for about 3 to 4 kilometres. Just on the, it's not even a bike lane. I don't think they want bikes on there. So I was basically running on the highway. It was close to the worst run of my life.
Yeah.
But
and that heart rate. Back. after your comments last week about not rating heart rates, but that nearly turned into a threshold for you, 146 average.
Fuck, I needed to get home. I was literally like, I needed a shower. I needed to check out of the bloody accommodation. I was a bit scared. I turned my heart rate off because I didn't want to see it. Turned it off my screen so because I knew I was going overboard. But you know what you're like when you start stressing about being late. I was going to be late to check out of the accommodation, and I had to do some cleaning, had to shower, breakfast, trip to the airport. Fucking hell. Put a bloody path through there. Someone put a path through there. Even a hole in the fence I would have gone through. 8 foot with barbed wire along the top just to keep you out of a beautiful running area. That's the Gold Coast in a nutshell, I reckon.
Yeah, right. Brad, get this show back on its, tracks probably.
Well, I do want to point something out that maybe, Julian, if you did a little bit more research, you would realise that you basically did a lap around Coomera. I guess that's the green area you're talking about, right?
Yeah.
Do you know who trains in Coomera on the trails in there?
I recognise Michael Challey has been on one of these trails.
Yeah, so the Commonwealth Games gold medalist for the marathon does most of his training right where you were running. You just couldn't find the trails.
So I went on the trails the first few days. But there's the biggest loop there was about 3 kilometres. Now, yeah. I get you like repetitive like training, but my mind works a little bit faster than yours does, a little bit more in-depth. So I need some sort of stimulation when I go and run.
Then don't whinge about all the road.
Oh, because it could have been a beautiful loop.
If a guy can win a Commonwealth Games gold medal by training through there, I think it's good enough for you.
I doubt that he does any more than 1 or 2 sessions a month in there.
We'll ask him.
I would like to know.
I've been for a run through there with him. As I said, it's not a big space, so you would have to do multiple laps. But it's a nice. There's nice trails.
It's just a trail in wetlands. It's humid, sticky, smelly. Yeah. It's no Ballarat, trust me.
Maybe that's tough man's training. I said gold medal at Commonwealth Games. Maybe you're a bit soft down in Ballarat.
my foot is hating me from that run.
Rightio, King of Christchurch, roll into your week. What'd you do after the win?
All right. I don't really have too much to report that's very exciting this week. So I had a run in Christchurch Monday morning before I flew home, and it was wet, but I felt really good when I woke up. Like, I had no soreness from the half at all, to the point that probably got a little bit carried away. Ended up averaging 3:53s for 9K the morning after, with like a 3:30 last K. Had breakfast with my coach after that, and he just shook his head. But I'm like, hey, I'm not sore. That's got to be a good thing, doesn't it? So the instructions for the week, and my coach often does this, we just have a jogging week. It's almost like an opportunity just to reset, because there's nothing really big coming up. I've had a pretty good block. So that was Monday, flew home. Tuesday morning, just got out at Mulligan's for an hour, 4:06s. Got rolling a bit on my Wednesday run, so I did 90 minutes at 3:54s, followed by had a physio appointment at Flex Out Physio, so shout out to those guys.
We're doing that now, are we?
And then I got back into a double on Thursday. Just an hour in the morning and 35 minutes in the Arvo with 6 10-second hills. Friday, just another double, 65 minutes in the morning at 4:10s and 35 minutes in the Arvo at 4:10s. By Saturday, I was actually getting pretty sick of just running. I just get a bit stale. And I think this is part of the idea, is to just bring me back a little bit to then have another 4 week or 5 week training block. So I often feel pretty ordinary at the end of a week of just jogging. So Saturday I ended up going for 19K. Was pretty controlled early on, and I don't know, about 50 minutes, 60 minutes in, I'm like, nah, I'm just going to pick it up a little bit here. So started rolling some sort of 3:30s, 3:40s towards the end. So average 4 minute Ks for that 19K. and then 4 minute K's in the Arvo for 35 minutes and 6 20-second strides. And then Sunday headed out to Stromlo with the Telford squad and got through 31K at 4:10s, which it's always a tough run out there, especially the last, well, there's like a 3K climb from maybe 24K in. So got through 153K of just running, no real sessions, couple of surges here and there. Yeah, so I'll get back into sessions this week. So that's a pretty boring week.
Few course records in there though.
Yeah, some of them I already hurled. So I certainly wasn't out chasing course records.
Okay. Yeah, that wouldn't be a smart thing to do.
No.
On your recovery week, pull back on that.
Yeah, so it's, sort of, it's good though, like it's a recovery week, but still ran 150K, so I'm certainly not, you know, it's not like it's certainly not going to lose fitness off that.
Nah, definitely maybe, not. It's good for you.
Just a bit, yeah, and I think it's more I just lose a little bit of sharpness and then feel a bit ordinary in the first couple of days into the new cycle. But I think it's good for long-term development.
Yeah, and those 6 times 10-second hills, they keep you sharp.
Yeah, and the 20-second strides and that sort of thing. So, yeah, all good.
All good, all good. Next stop, Gold Coast, pacing.
Yeah, well, we're less than 3 weeks away now. So looking forward to that. I think last year I was a bit nervous about it.
You were real nervous. Real high strung.
I didn't have a lot of experience at running marathons, and I still had that sort of worry that, you know, will I pop at sort of 25K or 30K? And whereas now I feel actually pretty confident that, one, the pace will be comfortable, and two, that I don't have an issue now running pretty solid for 2 hours. So, feeling pretty good about it.
Good, good.
I think you'd want to feel good about it.
you got 8 minutes slower than your PB.
Yeah. You're in trouble if you don't, and you're in PB shape. Jeez.
Do you know, or can you say who you got with you, Brad?
Pacing?
Yeah.
I can say. I can't remember the guy's name. I'd have to go back through an old email. I might find it. I'll find it out during the course of the podcast and let you know.
Can't remember his name.
No, I can't.
Obviously not a big dog like Croker over it.
Some guy from the UK that's married a Brisbane girl. But he's paced a couple of big city marathons in the last sort of couple of years. And he's got some pretty quick PBs too. So he's Tom Payne from the UK.
Oh, yeah. I've heard that
name. Married an Aussie girl. He's paced Marrakesh.
Oh, wait. Oh, no. I'm thinking of Tony Payne.
Tony was from Berlin this year. Yeah, last year. Yeah.
So he's paced Marrakesh Marathon and Barcelona Marathon in the past. That's who I'm pacing with.
Mm-hmm. Better do a good job, I reckon. Better do a good job. My week is pretty...
How much you get paid?
What's that?
Cash money.
How much you get paid for that?
Of course you can.
Of course. Why not?
Is it the same as last year, Brad?
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you be able to tell me that?
I'll
tell you after.
It's a business deal.
You should tell the listeners. This is interesting.
It's in the... You can only give a... We can cut this out if Brad's not... It's in the ballpark of like...
I'm happy to say what it is. I don't think it matters. Yeah.
They might not be happy with that though.
Of course they're happy with it. They're giving you the money. You don't have to sign some sort of confidentiality.
No, I don't.
How much are you getting paid?
Depends on how long he stays out there for. You get paid on...
Yeah, that's true, actually.
You get your first payday at half marathon, and then you get you get extra money for every 5K after that. So 25, 30, 35. No pay after 35. That's why Brad and I looked at each other at 30 last year and said, if we keep going, we can afford a pair of Nike Vaporflies.
And also putting Viv and I up at the race hotel as well, which is good.
Viv too? Kind.
Yeah, she's coming up.
That sounds fun. Pity it's on the Gold Coast, though.
Hey, Gold Coast.
Hey, it's sold out. It's done.
Getting out of the Canberra winter cold for like a weekend is ideal.
Mate, it rained every day I was there. It wasn't that good.
Yeah. Won't for the marathon, though. It never rains for the marathon.
Yeah, it's always beautiful conditions. Good segue.
How much are you getting paid then?
Enough to buy a few pairs of 4%ers if Viv doesn't spend all the money while she's up there.
And if he hits the splits, if he stuffs it up, you don't get paid.
What sort of allowance have you got to get paid?
I think through halfway, I think they had like a 30-second either side of the pace that they want.
Oh, yeah.
So what's that? I guess a couple of seconds, okay.
You just run real fast and then just stand off the mat.
Yeah.
Step over when it reaches your threshold.
Or the opposite, like go slow to 18 and then drop a 9-minute 3K through to 21. Mid-race.
Don't do that.
Tell us about your week, Brady.
Thank you, Bradley. My week was geared towards Gold Coast Half Marathon. So this is 3 weeks out for me. And biggest mileage, I hit 190. We were only planning to hit 180, but a few warm-ups went a bit longer and cool-downs, and, it just kind of got away from me a bit, but it wasn't intentionally trying to hit 190. But it was good, easy running on Monday, did 8K in the morning and 16K in the afternoon, 8K Tuesday morning, and then my session Tuesday afternoon was 3x3K at half marathon effort, and then 2x1.5K. at 10K effort, so been loving this session. So we added the 2.2 by 1.5K as this week, and didn't look at the watch again and just went with feel, and felt amazing in it, just felt super relaxed, felt like I was kind of running that half marathon effort around 9:20-ish, 9:25-ish, and then when I finished the session, it was pretty encouraging to see that I hit the first one in 9:12, the second one, which is a bit more uphill, in 9:18, and the third one in 9:07, and then that was all off 3 minutes recovery and on a dirt track and stuff and jumping a few puddles and stuff like that. So, felt super smooth. And then the 2x1500s were in 4:24 and 4:26. So really positive session, probably one of the best sessions I've done to date. And just the way it felt and, I was super happy with that one. Super relaxed and just loving not looking at the watch. I keep banging on about it every week. Just running free and just trying to tell myself, this feels like half marathon, this feels like half marathon, don't force anything. So that was good. Wednesday, Wednesday morning, easy 8K, easy 16K in the morning and 8K in the afternoon. Big day at work with staff meetings and stuff, so both those runs in the dark, getting a bit over that at the moment. Thursday, easy 8K in the morning, and I did half a monofartlek in the afternoon. Richard's just being super conservative at the moment, and we're cutting back from doing 3 sessions a week to, last week was 2.5, and then next week, which is this week when we're recording, is just 2. So took that pretty easy, really just kept it in kind of third gear. Averaged 3:07s, which is pretty easy pace for me, and just had fun. 10 minutes, bang for your buck. It's not a bad session, but it goes pretty quick. So that was good that he cut that one back because I was a bit tired off the back of that session on Tuesday. Jogged through Friday with a couple of easy runs, 12K in the morning and then 6K in the afternoon. And then did a big tempo session on Saturday. So we had a lot of rain in Echuca on Thursday night and Friday. So it washed out Scenic Drive where I've been doing all my longer tempos the last probably month. So it meant one thing. It meant I was back out the industrial estate. That was the only place I could go to get this session done. So I was out there. Ben Pearson came out on the bike. He's a bit injured at the moment and has to do a bit of bike riding. So he came out and handed me a gel, but didn't ride in front of me. He was just next to me the whole time. And the session was 8K at marathon pace into 10K at half marathon effort. Did the first 8K looking at the watch because I really wanted to just make sure I wasn't going too fast and getting sucked in. And then once 8K flicked over, I just ran it 10K at half marathon effort. And just switched off and just kind of got in a rhythm and held it and ended up running the last 10K at about 31:11, I think I split. So that was really positive. Heart rate data was good. We use a bit of that, unlike Julian, each week in our training. Pay attention to it and respect it a bit. So averaged 162 and, it was 18K at 313 average. And as I said, felt great. It actually felt like I was running about 312s or 313s. But I was just telling myself, Richard gave me a call on Friday and just said, don't force anything tomorrow. It's a big session. Just, don't go to the well. And that's how it felt. I felt like I was running 312s and making the conscious effort not to run push myself and run 309s or 310s. And when I looked at the end, most of the Ks were kind of in 37s, 38s. So, yeah, that was super positive. Got a few gels down as well, just trying to get in a bit of a habit of practicing those in those longer tempos. Got out for an easy jog in the afternoon and then just 2 hours easy on Sunday by myself in in Moama, which is good. Wet kind of dirt roads, which was a bit spongy, but yeah, good kind of 28Ks at our 417K pace and then 7K in the afternoon, which was nice for 192. So super stoked, super excited about how things are progressing towards Gold Coast. And yeah, those two sessions, Tuesday and Saturday, are probably some of the best ones, but more importantly, really happy with the way they feel more than anything. It's good to have good times, but the effort-wise is really good as well. So that was my week.
Very impressive week. And I would say that if you're doing those sessions very comfortably, then you should be running, I'd say, 65 low.
Putting a bit of pressure on me there, Bradley. But first goal is to break my PB. I think I said last week, my PB for the Haas from 2013, it's been a bit of a hanging over my head for a long time, and I've tried to break it on a number of occasions and haven't. So it's kind of been doing my head in for a while. So that'll be the first goal. But yeah, I feel like 310, kind of 309 pace at the moment feels very comfortable, and it would feel like a jog. And I think that's probably why Richard gave me that session where I do 10K at the end to kind of prepare me for the last 10K of a half marathon. So to know I can hit somewhere close to 31 minutes is a good sign.
Any prediction, Moose, for the half?
I like Christian's prediction. What did he say? 65 low. He's been pretty good with that stuff. I reckon he predicted you to run 65, 48. Is that right?
Yeah. So I didn't see. Where did he say this?
On another workout.
Okay. Oh, yeah, he might have done that on my Tuesday one. Hang on, I've got Strava open here.
Let me go back. I got it up. So he said...
low 66, he said.
I'd
take that. Like, my main goal is to PB. And, I think if I can do that going into a marathon block, it's really positive. But, yeah, people out there listening, if you've been a sucker to your watch for a long time and do a lot of training by yourself, just... to keep it on so you can upload to Strava and check it at the end, but just stop looking at it and just go and feel. I've been using it with a few blokes I'm coaching at the moment and just, yeah, changing the focus from being fixated on splits to just listen to how your body feels. Because I've done those 3K reps maybe the last 3 weeks, and every time I've done it on feel, and they've been a bit different, a bit of difference in the splits. I think the first week was kind of hitting, 9:25s, 9:30s, but they're feeling exactly the same at the moment, and it just takes all the pressure off. It's just a good way to run.
Yeah, I think if you go back through
Road to Berlin
podcast, yeah, you might get that I enjoy that approach as well.
Oh, yeah, just lovely, isn't it? So, yeah, that's good. Just got to stay in one piece. What have we got? 20 days.
Oh, 20 days for you to get an injury.
Yeah, I know. That's when, yeah, it's still too early to predict stuff. And end of school term, like kids
you
start getting sick.
You haven't had an injury since I've known you, though.
Never been injured.
Don't worry about that.
Never been injured.
100%. That is the craziest, most annoying thing ever.
All right. Someone got interviewed during the week and they asked that. And I said my biggest, proudest moment would be that I haven't been injured in all my career. So yeah.
You got an interview.
Yeah, 14 years. 14 years have been running. And most of that, the last 10 have been pretty high mileage.
Yeah, who interviewed you?
Who interviewed me? I'll tell you about that off air. When it comes out, I'll promote that one next week. Hasn't been published yet.
He loves having his fingers in multiple pies.
Yeah, doesn't he?
Spread it well, Bradley. So when that article comes out, I'll link it in the show notes. We'll get that sorted. Anyway, boys, let's thank some Patreon supporters. Who wants to go first? Bradley?
Green?
Sophie, yeah, that's Ryan. You. You're green.
Thank you to Sophie Ryan, who is the podiatrist based out of the Fitzroy Foot and Ankle Clinic. All right. The other Patreon, Samuel Clark. Samuel either works for the ABC or he lives in Perth. One of the two. We have two Patreons called Samuel Clark. So I actually follow Samuel Clark on Twitter. He's quite good.
Yeah, knows his stuff. Helped us a bit in the past too, if it's the Samuel Clark from the ABC. Bradley, are you thinking?
I've got two shout outs. First one is to my coach, Ben Wisby. He said he signed up mainly so that he could hear my week of training without having to actually touch base. So it was a good way of him finding out what I've been doing. And actually, I forgot to mention, we didn't touch on it during the interview that I had with him about his crazy running streak. He has not missed a day of running for like 2,000 plus days or something ridiculous like that. Seriously, like
2,000.
Yes, yeah. I'll find out before the end of this episode because we were having chats about it. He's actually calculated it, and to the point, like it's a bit nuts at times. To the point that after Christchurch Marathon, he's had a sore foot this week, but he's still been going out for like 5K just so he doesn't miss the streak. We'll break the streak. So, yeah, so I thought I'd get that on air now because we missed it during the interview. And the other shout-out is to Billy Dale. So I know Billy Dale through a close friend of mine. He lives and works in Singapore now, but I reckon over 10 years ago, the three of us, my mate Billy Dale and myself, we did like a three-day trek down around Mount Buller. So thanks for your support, Billy Dale.
Yeah, I'm thanking Stephen Van Rees, his Bendigo boy. Just started, I think he's always been involved in the park run and kind of the fun run scene, but made that transition this year over to the AV cross-country stuff. Been on the bus for Bendigo a couple of times and think he's enjoying that, so thanks for the support. And Nick Simdins, thanks for your support as well. I don't know anything about you, Nick, so I can't really say a personal story, but thanks for the support, and we do see your name popping up on social media now and then. Rightio, let's get into some news. Stockholm Diamond League. This was some pretty good news to wake up to this morning. Two Aussies, first and second. You boys see it?
Yeah, I watched it this morning.
Oh, it was impressive, wasn't it?
I watched it.
Yeah. They were just so strong.
Yeah, and aggressive. It's good to watch racing like that.
Yeah. Like, it would have been interesting if it was the other way around, because obviously Deng did all the work and then was just pipped sort of at the end. Deng had that breakthrough last week and ran 144-something, but now Bowl's gone past him in terms of PBs. So, but how impressive is that squad now? You've got Alex Rowe and those two guys all within, what, 0.2 of the Aussie record or something?
Mm. All coached by Justin Rinaldi.
That's amazing, that stat, to have three of the top five all time. That's insane.
Yeah.
Yeah, three of the top five all time. They ran 144.56 and 144.61. So fast. And early days a bit in their season over there too, isn't it? Some pretty big opportunities coming up for them.
Yeah, you think early. It would be early. Yeah, but who knows? Like, they're coming off... Oh, well, Deng is coming off the... Com games, so some people would have a. It'd be hard to peak and then keep that going along, wouldn't it? You'd think that he's come off a bit of a break.
Hmm. Not many Aussies win Diamond Leagues though. Like, I'm not sure if they're as stacked as they used to be, but pretty amazing coming first and second in a Diamond League.
Well, who was there? Was big fella there? Rhodesia?
No.
Not sure. What is like up to? Yeah. There weren't a lot of big names there, but they cleared out. Like, they were dominant. It was like daylight third.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pacemaker didn't help him either. He went too hard, too early.
And
then
the NCAA championships, Oliver Hoare, Wisconsin Badger, won the 1,500 meters. So that's always cool to see an Aussie have success over there. I'm not sure what year he is. Is he a senior or is he a sophomore?
It's been about 3 years, I reckon.
So maybe a sophomore. Mm. That's a great run. 1,500 meter winner. Like, you can't fake that. You've got to get through heats. You've got to qualify. That's an enormous win. And there hasn't been too many Aussie winners over there. There has been a few, but it's a big deal when you do it. I think who was the last track runner from Australia to win an NCAA title?
Yeah, no idea.
Until you.
It
was an impressive run, though.
Dave McNeil?
Oh, yeah. He won a 5K, didn't he?
Yeah, I reckon.
Or a 10K, something like that, yeah.
And then again, in the ladies, in the Oregon Duck, Jess Lull won the 1,500 metres. So that's Men and Lady, 1500, both Australians. Amazing.
Yeah, that's pretty good stuff. And they both ran pretty good races. I've watched them both. Oliver Hoare in particular, like, he was gone with a bell, with the bell lap, and then he just came out of nowhere and absolutely smashed it. Like, such a good finish the last 50, 60 metres.
No, I haven't watched it. I haven't had a chance.
Too busy, Brad. Too busy.
How'd Chico go? Anyone running?
Chico State Div 2, different event.
Sorry.
Do they have like a Div 2 NCAAs, or that you just can't do it?
Yeah, they do.
Give us a quick lesson on American track culture.
Oh, well, there's four different divisions. There's Div 1, which is all the big schools. They get the scholarships. So it's pretty much determined by school size, number of scholarships available. So Div 1 schools, they can give out full rides to a lot of people. Div 2, you've got a little bit less play with your money. You've got to go in-state a lot more. No, Div 2, you don't really get international, not too many internationals anyway. Div 3, again, less. And then NAIA is like a lot of the arts sort of schools where you do actually get a few Kenyans down in the NAIA. But it normally, if you look at the NCAA Division 1 meet, it's the biggest and you'll get the highest caliber athletes.
Yeah, very good. You didn't ever run it for Chico? Did you do Div 2 champs?
Yeah, I never qualified.
Water boy.
Yeah, pretty much. I ran 1425 or something? No, not that. 1430. Any other year I would have gone, but I didn't because it was a quality year. I was up in Lake Tahoe just having a bit of party time while that was going on.
The old it was tougher back in my day, hey?
No, it was hard in my year. Move on.
We're moving on from the track stuff to the road ultra. Comrades, did you watch this one?
I didn't watch it. I was getting some updates.
Yeah. 5 hours long.
Yeah. Stupid question. Sorry about that. Did you see the results? There were some pretty impressive results in there. Brad doesn't rate it. Brad doesn't rate Steve Way coming third, 90K at 3:42 pace. Reckons it's easy because it's all downhill.
No, I don't think it's easy, but I guess, I don't know. Like, yeah, when I thought about it last night, I'm like, that is it's over two marathons. So, yes, like, I do rate it, but I think it's something that you could potentially train for. Like,
yeah, Watto trained for it. Yeah, Watto did all right.
Hey, I think nutrition is conditioning your legs is one thing, and I reckon nutrition is the other.
Mm-hmm. That's what ultras are about. They're about fatigue, foot and your feet, because you're on a hard ground so long. You're very prone to sort of blistering and a lot of movement in the shoe over that time. You can't be wearing your little tiny flats out there, that's for sure.
A lot of them were in the Vaporflies, did you see that?
Yeah, they were. Well, what's her name? Camille Heron won them in Vaporflies last year, I reckon. A prototype just before they were released.
Yeah.
They're a very cushioned shoe. Like, they're not your light. Yes, they're a racing flat, but you still feel very cushioned in them.
They're
ideal.
There's this new category of shoes now that's marathon flats. Shoes like that are designed to go for 2 to 3 hours. You need some cushioning for 2 to 3 hours on asphalt.
Mm. Yep. The winner, Bong Yumusa Mathebu. Pronounce that probably exactly right. He won it. He averaged 3:38 pace, and Anne Ashworth 4:07 pace. So females going pretty handy over that as well. 4:07s is pretty quick pace for 90Ks, and had a couple of Aussies there. Actually, had more than a couple. We had 173 Australians over there. So that's a pretty big deal. And Vlad Shatrov, he was the first place Australian in 21st place, averaging 4:01s. So he's rolled Watto from last year. It was Watto 24th, wasn't he?
Yeah, but I reckon Watto ran faster uphill.
Different years, uphill, downhill. What water average last year? Can you remember?
I reckon it was four flats, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive, isn't it?
Watto smashed Shatrov last year.
Yeah.
Don't underestimate the power of little short man Ash Watson.
He had
a cracker last year.
I interviewed him. We spoke about it. Go back and listen to it. I'm a big fan of Watto.
Turned it off halfway. He's got no life on the interview. He had no funny jokes. He's actually quite entertaining. On the interview, it was boring. You didn't get enough out of it.
Yeah, all right. Thanks for that tip. What about Soundgate Parkrun? Last bit of news for this week. This was pretty impressive to see some of these results.
We got a message about him. I didn't see the results. Got a message.
Yes, we did. Brad, tell us about him.
So I'll just read through some of the stats. So that 63 runners went sub 18 minutes, 42 sub 17, 15 sub 16, and one runner was sub 15. So Aiden Hobbs won the race in 14:35, which for a park run is pretty impressive. I believe it's 12 seconds off Liam Adams' Australian park run record. But so much depth. Like, it's sort of good to see, I guess, lots of groups get together and organise, you know, the one park run for it to be a bit of a real hit out.
Yeah, I agree. And it must be a flat and fast course as well if they're banging at those kind of times.
Yeah.
Just to throw in, like, a little bit of...
What, controversy?
The other side of things, yeah. Like... These type of runners, wouldn't it be great if they went out and ran like a cross-country meet all in the one meet? Like, parkrun's great, but is parkrun starting to kill off our local athletics? Especially if all these training groups are now lining up at parkrun instead of the local cross-country.
I don't know how strong the local cross-country is, though, in some of the states. Like, I think Victoria's is like, yeah, leaps and bounds ahead of other states. So I'm not sure if they're, if it's set up for them.
Yeah, well, I don't know either.
Good point you make, though.
Yeah, it's just we see it a bit now, parkrun getting bigger and bigger. And look, parkrun's fantastic. It gets the average runner out into, it gets them into running. And they have somewhere to go every week, run with other people, test themselves. It's a fantastic thing, but... Is it killing off local athletics meets where you have to actually pay a small fee?
You mean like the club cross country stuff, like that Ballarat and Bendigo has, like on the Saturday afternoon? Yeah, I'd agree with you. There'd be more people. Why even know in Echuca we've got parkrun, we've 100 there every weekend, but there's no way we'd start a local running club that would do something on a Saturday afternoon because they'd be all going to parkrun in the morning.
Yeah. So, and if they're running on Saturday morning, they're probably not going to race on the Sunday.
Convenience about it's one thing as well, like rocking up, get it done pretty quick, go home, have the rest of your day rather than going somewhere at 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
That's what I like about it.
Yeah, it's so good.
I'd say, what about Croker's chances at breaking the Australian record or the world record for parkrun?
That'd be great for the Inside Running Podcast, Brad. Have a crack at it now. You're fit as.
Oh, other races coming up.
Well, I'm actually boycotting our local park run because they changed the course. So if I went to that course, I'd have a go at that one. But I've boycotted our local park run here because they've changed the course.
Yeah, but why? Who cares if they change the course?
Well, it's slower. I can't run. I won't be able to run that time on that course. They've thrown this little section where you run out 150 meters and then do another U-turn after 150 meters. And I was just like, well, I'm going to do that. I can just run around the lake as a 5K hard myself.
Don't get the record when you do that, though. 14:22, Brad. Do you reckon you could break that on a flat course? Easy.
Well, I don't know. I've only just run faster than that on the track, so probably not.
Yeah, but that was pre, like, 2018, Brad. You've had a breakthrough since then.
Maybe. Maybe I'll have to head up Soundgate Parkrun. I'll put it on my to-do list.
Yeah.
Because it sounds like it's probably the quickest one in the country. If you've got that much.
Surely there's a fast one in Canberra. How many parkruns in Canberra?
There's four, but they're not, like, they wouldn't be as quick as this. I saw this one. This one's pretty much just out, turn around, come back. One turn. That's quick. Plus Canberra's at altitude. Don't laugh. It is.
I'll take that.
600 metres. Slight, makes a slight difference. Yeah, talk to Dick Telford. Dick Telford will tell you that they always run a little bit slower on the track for any longer than 3K here.
Mm. Yeah, let's get him down to sea level and someone can pace him through. I'll help you out. Come to Chuga's not that fast. Shepparton's good. Shep, you'd have a crack. Yeah.
Speaking of guys that could actually pace me through, it'd be rude not to give a shout out to Stewie McSween, who finished second at the Oslo Diamond League 10K in 28.05. Now, that's a guy that could break the Aussie park run record.
He could do it at Ballarat with 15 U-turns.
He could. So, and that broke the 40-year-old Tasmanian record, I believe.
Yeah, he's in good shape, old Stewie.
Mm.
King Island, the man comes from.
Yeah, still it's part of Tasmania, isn't it?
Yeah, amazing. But have you ever been to King Island?
No, I haven't. They have some old. They have a marathon down there, don't they?
No.
I think they do, though. I'm pretty sure they do.
They have the King Island Imperial 20 Miler.
That's it. Sorry, that's the one. Yeah. Okay.
Handicap race. I've been in it.
Here we go, Brad. Here we go.
Oh, back here we to, go. Yeah. This. Yeah.
Just and replace, I bet you. And you won it, didn't replace, you? Back marker, ran through the field, won it.
Very lonely run across the island. But what was great about it was the after party. Lobster, cheeses, fish, other food, very good. And dancing, so much dancing.
Right, yeah.
Anyway, good run, Stewie.
Yeah, good work, Stewie. Bigger and better things to come from him this season as well. He'll run, he'll pop up somewhere else, I don't know.
Yeah, where is he going next? Like, what's next for Stewie McSween?
I don't know. Slide into his DMs on Instagram and ask him. Report back next week.
Yeah.
Listen, a question, Moose. This come from Jack Kelly. This is a good one. I like it.
Jack Kelly, employee of mine. Little unsettling. He loves the podcast so much, but whatever. For your next podcast, can you guys have a discussion on your favourite sessions and how those favourite sessions have changed over your running careers? From Jack Kelly.
Good question, Jack.
It is a good question because there's a little bit of depth to it here, and the depth part relates to how it's changed, which I would suggest is would be related to your goals and your distances you run. So Croker, he is like he used to like running the short distance stuff, and then he moved on to the longer distance training. So how about Croker, you mentioned your favourite session in the past and your new favourite session.
Yeah. All right. So good start there, Moose, because I used to love like 200, like 10 by 200 on the track because it was like short, sharp, off a minute recovery. Got a little bit lactic, but it was an easy session. This was when I was a 1500 metre runner. But then I used to look at sessions like a 30-minute tempo when I was a middle-distance runner, and I'd sort of dread it because I'd get to 25 minutes and I'm like, oh, this last 5 minutes is tough. Or even a monofilic like at 20 minutes used to be, you know, a challenge when I was only running sort of 90K a week. And now moving up to the marathon, like I really enjoy now my hour tempos over the rolling hills. Or when I come back down to doing a monofartlek now, I'm like, well, that was over and done with pretty quick. So yeah, what you perceive as being difficult changes depending on, I guess what you've been doing currently. The one thing that's probably changed for me is as I got older and moved up to the marathon, I actually probably didn't, I focus more now on just stringing together weeks as opposed to looking at individual sessions. So I enjoy now just stringing together week after week after week of, you know, 100-mile weeks. But, yeah. Right.
Give us your session.
My favorite session now would be, I've sort of said, like, hour over Mulligans or 2x10K if I'm in a marathon block, or even a 10K or anywhere between 5 and 10K hard at the end of my long run. They're the sessions that I really enjoy now because, as you said, they're the ones that I feel like give me an indication of what sort of shape I'm in for my goal races.
Yes. Good. Brady?
Back in the day, I used to really enjoy 1K reps down the lake in Bendigo. It's just this awesome path and just a really easy place to do them, and found that was a good good session to be able to hit some decent splits in to help you for kind of like the 5K work, but also a good session for half marathon before I stepped up to the marathon. So anywhere between 6 to 8 1Kers with a minute rest. I love that session. Probably don't do it much anymore, but yeah, definitely one of my highlights when I was younger. Now I enjoy, you can probably tell by my recounts each week, I enjoy the longer tempos. So probably anywhere between 12 or 14K up to what I did on the weekend, 18K, where we change the pace a bit, or sometimes we might float for 6, kick it down for 3, and then go back to a float and then a kick down. But yeah, anything that's kind of 45 minutes to an hour at kind of marathon and half marathon pace is enjoyable for me. You kind of get in a rhythm and you can kind of, you're comfortably uncomfortable. You're fast, but you're not too spent. So that's my answer to that question.
Do you think it's more though related to, you feel like that's more relatable to what you're training for though? Is that why you enjoy it more?
No, yeah, that's one part. But I'm not that, it doesn't cook me too much, if that makes sense. Like I feel in control and I feel like I can just relax at that pace. Whereas when you said hills, like that's my worst session. I hate doing that hill loop in Bendigo because I know how much it's going to hurt. Whereas I know these are going to be kind of 7, 8 out of 10 perceived effort kind of level. Whereas when I go to do the hills, I know they're going to be 11 out of 10 and I'm going to want it to be over 80% way through it.
But having said that, the hill sessions hurt, but why I think I like them is because I know how good they are for me. So that's why I like doing them, because I'm like, well, this is going to make me stronger so that when I do get down onto the flat for my longer tempos, I'm like, this feels so easy.
Yeah, and I guess, yeah, the question with the word favorite sessions, I'm probably reading that as they're my favorite because they don't hurt, but I still get a good session out of it and I'm usually successful in them. Whereas you're just a tough unit and you just like grinding away on the hills.
No, I just like preparing. I just like preparing well. So I prefer to sort of get the hard work done in training, knowing that it's going to help me, you know, for future sessions or races.
Mm. Yeah, it's good. It's good having different answers to that one. What about you, Wise Moose? Man? Yeah.
Favorite session? 20 by 2 minute on, 1 minute off. Jake Robertson type session. 20. Kenyan fartlek, we can also call it. Chris O'Neill introduced me one day in Ballarat.
I thought it was moose. I thought anything that had 2 minutes on, 1 minute float was moose fartlek.
No, that's an 8x1K. That's an 8x that session.
20 by 2 minutes with 1 minute float. So what pace are you hitting the 2 minutes at? Because that could be hard if you're going too hard.
Yeah, well, the fastest that I've done it, the best, was before Great Ocean Road Marathon 2 weeks before. And that was, I average about 3:17 maybe, 3:18. But I've done it in the past where it's been a lot slower, where the ons and offs have been closer. You pretty much don't look at your watch for paces, or well, I don't when I do it. I just run hard for 2 minutes and then float for 2 minutes. And at the end, you're given a... you got your result. It's very straightforward. Sometimes you'll do it over hills or undulating terrain, so pace isn't as relevant. But 60 minutes worth, you're tired at the end. You got a bit of fatigue in your legs, so picking up the pace after that many surges is quite tough. It's very marathon-like. That's my favorite.
It's only for tough men though. I wouldn't recommend most people going out and trying to bang out 20 by 2 minutes off a minute.
You got to be late in a marathon prep, I reckon. You got to have some very long. You got to have longer runs in your legs, and you got to have some longer workouts in your legs before you do it too.
What effort level do you, like, if someone's at home wants to try it? Do you say marathon or half marathon effort for the 2 minutes, then float at marathon effort, or?
The last time I ran it was more like 10K to half marathon pace on a very flat road, and then the offs were at slower than marathon pace, but not by a whole heap.
Good one. What about back in the day, back in the Chico State days? What was your favourite session back then?
We did an 8K tempo on the track once. Fuck, that was tough. So it was designed for like the 10K track guys to get a feel for running a long time and be a bit more disciplined maybe. Geez, that was a tough workout. 8K tempo on the track. Kind of got faster as he went along. Yeah, shit. I always like, I've done that once before, or a couple of times since then, and you make sure you finish it strong and you start a bit easier, that's for sure. Because if that goes pear-shaped early, it's a long way home.
The question was your favourite session, though, not your hardest session.
I like to challenge myself.
All right.
So I enjoyed that, yeah.
Good one. Thanks, Jack Kelly. He's been a supporter for a long time, back in the Road to Berlin days. So thanks for sending in that question to Julian. Moose on the Loose.
He's not a patron.
Isn't he? Yeah. Can tell you what, Jack. Should be paying for this content if you've been here from the start.
I'll take it out of his pay.
Salary sacrifice before you pay him.
Good question.
Moose on the Loose.
Oh, yeah, all right, Moose on the Loose. So how many times has this happened before, right? You go down the local track and, well, you go to a new location, put it that way. Bloody thing's shut, gates shut, fence over, like fence high, no little sneaky way in, some sign up saying trespassers prosecuted, this is the property of whoever, council, what it, tracks, athletic tracks being shut to the public. Nothing annoys me more, especially when we're in this epidemic of obesity and our sport, track and field, is struggling so much. We can't get anyone down there to compete on an interclub Saturday, or can't even get anyone to watch Zatopek. Well, maybe it's because no one can actually join the sport without bloody signing up to clubs or anything. Like, how much fun was it when you were a kid and doing a little bit of running to go down the track? There was this special, there's a bit of magic about it, jumping on the track, doing a few laps. I remember Landy Field is the perfect example in Geelong. Anyone can go to Landy Field. They lock it at sunset, and they open it at sunrise. Old bloke Richard Palmer used to do it. He's passed away now, but I remember he would be there, and anyone can go on and use it. So we would go down. There would be a heap of people there, all loving life on the track. It was a great community. An example is Runaway Bay. There's a track there right outside our place. We went to get on, and it was like a fortress. It's like Fort Knox trying to get into that thing. We couldn't get in. And I thought, well, what about if a junior wanted to come and train down here? How is he going to get in, or she? This is crazy. Why don't we let people train on these tracks? Even at Deakin in Geelong, you can get down there. You can walk onto the track. You can do a workout by yourself. You can contribute to the sport of track and field by participating. It's the owners, I don't know who they are, the councils, whatnot, that block your access. The track in Ballarat, you can actually get, anyone can go and buy a pass from, it's a little bit of a clunky process, but you can buy a pass, you can get like a key card, and there's like an electronic thing on the gate where you click it and it goes, and you can get in. But at least you can get in, and at least anyone can do it. There at least is a process where it can happen. All these other tracks around the place, and there's thousands where you can't actually access that beautiful orange spongy stuff. Yes.
I'm with you. Yeah. I think it depends on who owns it as well, doesn't it, with the process?
No, it's always about who owns it, who wants to make money from it, basically.
And there's nothing worse than, let's say there's like a bit of a lower fence around a track and you can maybe jump over it and you're not going to be there for that long, but then you jump the fence. This is like all hypothetical, like if you were to do this, and you get out in the track and they've got those barriers, that like those gates that swing over like the first three lanes, and it's like, and they're every 100 metres, so you can't even do like reps unless you're going to run long every lap.
Well, you can adjust, you can work it out, but
no, it's still a pain.
It's a pain. And what are they doing trying to save their bloody lanes? How tight ass is that?
Yeah, and I don't, like, you look at other sports, like you can go to the local footy oval and kick your footy on their oval and kick some goals, or you can go to the local soccer oval and use that, or, but, yeah, like every other sport you can kind of do it, but running, they just protect it and don't let you use it.
Yeah, oh, I agree. I think it's rubbish. I think that's the way to get people involved in our sport. Encourage people to get on the track, to feel the exhilaration of running on a track like we all get.
Mm, good moose on the loose. I think a few other people would agree with that. And maybe that's why there's a split between like athletics and like the park run stuff you were talking about before.
Exactly. You've got to find ways to compete with this.
How's the AIS track work, Brad? You're still allowed to roll up?
Nah, so it's locked and you're only allowed in there probably like in the afternoons between sort of 4 and 8 o'clock at night. And if you're not a staff member of the AIS, you've got to pay.
How much do you know?
Well, it's weird. Like I've been like a staff member there, so I've got a pass. But what a lot of people used to find frustrating was they'd go up to the track, they'd get to the gate and they'd say, do you have a ticket? So that's like, you don't pay cash there. You give them a ticket. And to get a ticket, you have to go down to the swimming pool and either buy an individual ticket or like a book of 10. And it's like, but and anybody that knows the AIS, the swimming pool is a fair way away from the track. So it's like, you've come here for a session. You're sending me away to go and run another kilometer to the pool to come back. So it's not a great system. I'm not sure how it works now. But I haven't done a session on the AIS track for, I don't know, over 2 years.
Yeah. Mm. And I feel country towns as well, much more disadvantaged in this incident, Julian, example.
Yeah. I'm not sure about that, though.
Well, I don't think they've got the numbers to have it regularly open. For example, like Chris Armstrong, my mate over in Shepparton, he's given me like 3 weeks notice to say the Shepparton Athletics Club have booked it for an hour, paying $80 an hour for 3 weeks' time on a Tuesday night if you want to come over and do quarters on the track. Otherwise, yeah, you can't do it. You got to work your program around it.
Who owns this track in Bendigo?
Nah, this is Shepparton. Council owns this one. Shepparton. And I think La Trobe Uni, they used to own Bendigo, and that was, this is back when I was living in Bendigo years ago, but that used to be an okay system. You'd pay $50 and get a swipe card, and that was just like a deposit, and you can kind of go and use it whenever. But I think they've changed that now, and even, Jamie Cook was telling me the other day they can't use lane one anymore, even if you do pay your fees.
Just save the precious turf.
Don't know who we're saving this stuff for. No one's, if the runners aren't being it safe for them, who's using it?
If anyone should get access, it's the Beast.
Mm, true. Biggest name to come out of Bendigo, that's for sure. That's it. What's going up this week, boys, before we cut to the interview? Brad, back into sessions?
Yes, I'm going to do... actually, I've got the Moose Fartlek tomorrow.
Good.
8x2 minutes with a 1 minute float, a longish midweek run. I've got some solid tempo workout at Mulligan's on Friday, and 36K on Sunday, actually. Just been my longest run since Biwa. I thought I should do something long, considering I have to run probably 35K in a couple of weeks. So, so looking forward to it. So it should be about 100, should be a big week this week.
Mm-hmm. Julian, back in the sessions?
I've got to do it sometime, don't I? Yes. I'm just scared about it. What do you think I should start with? What should my first session be?
Moose Fartlek.
Nah, do something you've never done before so you can't compare it.
But Moose Fartlek's pretty good because 2 minutes, like I think we've spoken about it on another podcast, but 2 minutes is a pretty sweet spot for a rep where you're not doing too much damage. And you can you can adjust it a little bit, even with the float, you know, like just back it off a little bit if you do want to get a bit of speed.
Wear big shoes too. Look after the plantar fasciitis.
Mm. Yeah, you got to get rid of those niggles. I'm going to run some hills in Bendigo and then some longer reps on Saturday. I think hopefully the rain stays away so I can get back on the dirt. It was good out the industrial the other day, but I don't want to get back in the habit of going out there too often. Righto, this week's interview, Gary Mayer. Haven't recorded it yet, so I can't talk much about it, but hopefully it turns out all right tomorrow when I do it. Otherwise, you'll just go straight into the Benny Walker music and you won't hear an interview this week. Thanks again, boys.
And I'll just jump in. So I found out my coach's running streak is 2,434 days.
Ooh, so how many years is that?
It's 5.5, isn't it? More than that.
Over 6. Or about 6 years. It's close to 6 years, isn't it?
Yeah.
How about the old fella? Who was it? Fuck. Comes to me.
Ron Hill it was.
Ron Hill. Hilly. Hilly Socks. So Ron Hill, he had a brand where he did socks and stuff. But, yeah, he had a good old streak going.
Some good stories about
him. But then it comes down to
what
counts as a run. That's the thing. It's like, I think some people say it has to be more than a mile, but I reckon it needs to be at least 20 minutes.
It needs to be 5K, I reckon.
No, it was at least a mile.
Yeah, that was the official one for streaks, but I wouldn't count a mile as a run.
Mm.
So I like 20 minutes, but then it depends on so because Ben only ran 4K last Friday. Took him over 20 minutes.
Streaks over.
Maybe we'll put it to the listeners and say, tell him his streak's done.
Just break his heart. Start again. All right, let's do it. Thanks again, boys. Good chat. Enjoy that, listeners. Enjoy this chat with Gary coming up. And, if you want to hit it. Oh, go to our Patreon page if you want to hear the Coles Birmingham interview. We put that up there. 100 minutes of it the other day. That's going to sit up there for a while. Not sure when we're going to release it on iTunes. But, patrons are loving listening to that at the moment. And, iTunes reviews or anything like that. Send Brad emails about having a crack at this Australian Parker on record. And we'll go from there.
Good interview, apparently.
Very good. Would have been a good one to do on a. We gave it to him on Saturday. It would have been perfect long run listening. Imagine that. You got a 2 hour long run. You got an hour 40 interview. Just switch off in the world and get it done.
Get smarter.
Let Moose kind of fire some hard hitting questions at you for a while.
All right.
Over and out.
See you guys.
See you guys. All right, Gary Mayer, welcome to the Inside Running Podcast. Thanks for giving up some of your Tuesday afternoon to join us and, share some stories with the listeners.
Okay, Brady. I was probably silly enough to run my first marathon at age 15, going back to 1978. I had a coach at the time who wanted to break 3 hours, and I was primarily there just to, to pace him to break the 3 hours on this particular day.
Yeah, so that's what you're here for. Alan Peacock sent us an email about 2 weeks ago. I think he does some running with you and kind of said you need to chat to this guy. He's got an interesting story. Ran his first marathon when he was 15 and broke 3 hours and then went back 40 years later and did it again.
Yeah, I don't sort of recommend for anyone to run a marathon at age 15. Looking back, it did take me probably 6 months to get over that. And I can understand why you have to be 18 these days to enter, and I fully agree with that. I don't know how it all come about me trying to run these two sub-threes 40 years apart. But anyway, it did, and I caught sniff of it, and I knew that there wasn't too many people in the world that's done it. I think there's only 3 Americans and 1 Englishman that I'm aware of that's done it. And like I say, age was on my side as well because most people were 18 when they were in the first one, so you've got to be 58.
Yeah.
So I'm 55 going on 56. So I suppose you've got age on your side a little bit as well.
Oh, still pretty remarkable, mate. Take us back to that first one. I didn't realise that you were pacing your coach, and I'm not sure how good of that coaching guidance is if they're getting one of their 15-year-old athletes to pace them in a marathon.
Well, everyone, I think a lot of people have some sort of, you know, childhood sort of mentor that they look up to. And a good friend of mine, Barry Dobson, who I used to run thousands of kilometres with, I forget what age he was at the time, but he was probably ready to do sub three. But, you know, it happens on the day, Brady, sometimes, and these marathon things don't go to plan. And I think around 30K, he knew he wasn't going to do it. So he just told me to keep going, which I did.
Yeah, right. And what marathon was that, Gary, back in 1978? Wouldn't have been too many marathons around?
Yeah, no, there wasn't. This was the Queensland University Marathon, and it was just like a 5K loop around the campus.
Yeah.
And so I sort of did it, you know, five and a bit times. So
yeah, right.
It was a bit sort of repetitive. And there was a small sort of hill on the back end of the course. But, it was just a – one thing I do remember in this race was I think I was probably not drinking enough water, and I could feel my pants falling down. And I don't know whether it was the elastic that was going or me losing weight, but I definitely remember my pants starting to fall down in the last sort of few K.
Yeah. Can you remember how many people were in the race or like your feelings?
It wasn't that. No, it was a small field because I think I come 10th overall. From memory, but it would have only been a small field, Brady, you know, back in those days. I couldn't hazard to guess. So it was probably less than 100 entrants.
Yeah, right. And, Gary, what kind of training were you doing before that? Like, obviously, to run, 2:59.39, I think your official time was, back when you were a 15-year-old. Were you doing kind of big mileage?
Probably was. For my age, I probably was doing high mileage, up around that sort of, probably 100K a week, which was probably... you know, a bit probably excessive for that, you know, for that age. But I'm pretty sure that's what it would have been doing back then.
Yeah, right. And obviously you were running as a kid. I looked through some of your notes. You were kind of running national cross country around that time as well.
Yeah. I did get picked as a 14 or 15-year-old. I just ran as an AC, obviously. That was my first taste of sort of running with the big boys. I think Lawrence Whitty might have won the... junior cross that particular day. I don't know if you're familiar with Lawrence Whitty.
No, I'm not, but I could be embarrassed about not being familiar. Yeah.
That's all right. So that was my first taste of running with the big boys, running the national cross in 1977 I'm not sure if I was 14 or 15, Brady, at the time.
Yeah. Can you remember how your body pulled up and, like, did you hit the wall when you ran that 2:59?
Oh, look, I don't have too many vivid collections, but I do remember me being in a lot of pain in that last 5K, without a doubt. And I do remember I didn't pull up too – look, I've never really pulled up too well after most of my marathons, to be honest. But this particular one, I was still in grade 11 at school, and I remember going to school the next day and people were asking me why I was walking around so funny. Because I would have been hobbling like an old man for sure.
Yeah, it's pretty good story for when people ask what you did on the weekend, though.
Yeah, that's right. My quads were shot from memory, and I do know, Brady, that I was pretty well shot for 6 months after that in terms of racing all the guys that I used to beat. They were beating me for the following few months.
Yeah, right.
All of me just like, you know, being so flat and it took me a long time to get over that. I do remember that.
Yeah. Take me back to like what people were, I'm not sure if you can remember, but like what were your family and that kind of thinking and people involved in the sport? Like did anyone pull you aside and say, look, Gary, this probably isn't a really good idea to be doing at this age?
That never came about because, like I say, I went into the race not knowing I was going to finish it.
Yeah, so okay.
No one was ever saying, oh, Gary, you know, don't do this, you're crazy. And when I finished, I probably was getting more praise and accolades than I was being stupid.
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, people have their own opinions, but I was getting a lot more good pointers than bad pointers on reflection.
Yeah, good. And then you went on to, just looking at all the notes that I've been able to research on you, you kind of had almost 10 years off, 9 years, where you kind of didn't do a lot of running, but then you had a kind of breakthrough year in 1986. And I'll just give the listeners some of your personal best here, because you've run some quite quick times, but 3:57 for the 1500, 8:27 for the 3K, 14:34 for 5K, 30 minutes and 50 seconds for 10K, 67:29 for the half marathon, and 2:27 for the marathon. So a bit of a break there, as I said, 9 years, and then went on to become quite a credentialed runner on the Australian scene.
Yeah, I mean, I think I went through a phase when I did my seventh marathon, it might have been in 1984. Yeah, my PB one. I think I just went through a phase of sort of losing interest in running marathons, because it was almost like I was burned out at 22, in a way. So I think in the middle of 1985, I chose to go in a different direction, and I met this gentleman who was coaching a few guys around Brisbane called Jeff Walker. He used to run in Ron Clark's era, so he was in a Victorian. And I think Jeff's PB for 10K was, I hope he's not listening, but I think he was around about 29 and a half, sort of 10K runner. So I thought, well, he wasn't a bad runner, so he'll do me. And so I think I latched onto Jeff in the latter half of 1985, and over this next sort of 6 to 9 months, he got some really good results out of me. And all the training and speed work and the speed sessions he was setting me were just setting me up for all these PBs. Mm, it was just amazing. And it was funny because I used to sort of detest track. But when I met Jeff, I started running all these PBs on track and I started loving track.
Yeah, can you remember much about your training and stuff back then and the culture? Like, I think sometimes we the guys who are running now, we kind of wish we were around in the 80s when distance running in Australia was so kind of powerful and, so much that strong culture.
Yeah, it was great because there was a heap of guys sort of between sort of 17 and 24. There was probably, you know, sort of eight guys in the group, 8 to 10, and we'd meet at the Queensland Uni, and we always trained on a grass track. So we'd always do like a 5K warm up, 5K warm down, and maybe a 3K warm down, sorry, 5 up, 3 down. And then, some really awesome speed sessions that involved sort of a lot of 1200s, a lot of 12s and 4s and 16s, and a lot of short recoveries as well. I remember doing, you know, the 1200s with a very short recovery and then into a 4 short recovery into more 12s, and I was sort of thriving on it, and I just went from detesting track to loving track within a very short space of time.
And I guess that having a group of 9 guys doing those kind of reps with would be fantastic, because you might lead one for the night and hang on for the rest of them.
Yeah, especially when they're around your speed as well.
Yeah.
You know, because we could always sort of, you know, latch onto each other. And, I really remember those times so fondly. Yeah.
Yeah, so you're 24 now, 25, falling back in love with running over that kind of fatigue that happened in the late teens. And then you went off to work in the coal mine for 10 years and hardly ran.
Yeah, I know. It was, I suppose, a bit of a shame in a way, because my running career was sort of just starting to sort of blossom, so to speak, you know, representing Queensland. And it was a hard choice at the time. And I never really knew when I left Brisbane that I'd be going away for that period of time. I just thought I'd be back within a couple of years, but ended up getting a full-time job and living in central Queensland in a coal mining town for 10 years. And look, I really found, because I'm not too good with solitude and I don't like running by myself for sort of, you know, 25, 30K. And I did try it for a while and I just found it so hard. And I just, you know, there was guys doing triathlons in town and I sort of took an interest in those for, you know, a couple of years, because it just meant I had guys to sort of train with, to cycle with, to run with, you know, that type of thing, because I needed company.
Yeah, the toll on the body with working in the mines, though, must have been hard as well to try to get out for big mileage.
Maybe not, Brady. I think it was more a case of I think I just lost interest, I think.
Yeah.
I hate to say it after getting to that level, I hate to say. I just found it hard to keep the interest and the drive and the desire going.
Yeah, right.
So I spent the prime times of my life, of my running life, residing in a coal mining town. So, you know, if I turn back time again, would I have chosen to stay in Brisbane and pursue my running career? I don't really know. I mean, I did have some great times out there as well in that coal mining town. But, it's just one of those things, mate, where, you know, I just decided to spend 10 years out there and try to make a bit of money. And, yeah, I can't regret it too much.
Yeah, you never know what would have happened. You might not have been telling us about this 247 as a 55-year-old if that was the case, if you stayed in Brisbane and trained hard.
Well, that's exactly right too. Yeah, that's exactly right. So, you know, I come back from the mines at the end of 96 and took up where I left off and decided I wanted to get back into running again.
Yeah, looking through some of your results, you ran in the Olympic Trials Marathon at Sydney in 2000. Tell me about that experience.
Yeah, that's right. It was a big sort of hiatus between marathons because I think I ran my seventh one in 1984, so I'm lining up for my eighth one in 2000, like some 16 years later. And, I was really happy with my training preparation. I've been training with Pat Carroll and a few of the other boys running up to this particular one. I was putting in some pretty big mileage for me. When I say that, probably up around sort of 130 to maybe 140, but no more. And to be honest, I probably was going out aiming to try and break 230 on the day, and I thought I was capable of doing that. But a funny thing happened on the day. I think I got over that Anzac Bridge at about 26, 27K, and my quads just seemed to go, and I just couldn't seem to stride out as far, and I think I went through halfway in 73, 113 neat, and so I thought, well, I should be able to make 230 from here, but fell apart in the second half and ran 79.50 for the second half and finished in 232.50, I think it was. And some people were coming up and, you know, thanking me, congratulating me. But deep down, I was probably, you know, your own sort of harshest critic. And I really wanted to make 230 that day. So I was a bit probably cheesed off only doing 232.50. And I pulled up really, really sore as well after this marathon. I remember for the next week, I could hardly walk. And, I was happy to get picked for Queensland, and I didn't leave anything out there on the road that day, but just a bit disappointed that I just seemed to fade in that last sort of 16K and wasn't running how I expected that I should have been on that day.
Yeah. Can you tell us about the process? Like, so was it like a national champs and every state got to pick five or six people to go in it, or how did you get to running that event in the first place?
Yeah, that's correct, Brady. I would have been chosen among, I think we took six down. I think Queensland took six down. I think Andrew Leatherby, it would have been Andrew Leatherby, Pat Carroll, myself. I'm just trying to rattle off the other names, but I can't. So Pat was obviously probably trying to get an Australian singlet on this particular day, but unfortunately Pat didn't have a good day at the office. And I think Andrew Leatherby was probably the first Queenslander home that day in 227. And I'd have been the second Queenslander home, I think, in 232. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I suppose I'm happy.
Was that the same year Magnus Mikkelsen, he went super hard from the gun out by himself out in front?
That's correct. I'm pretty sure. Yeah,
that'd be, I'd love to, I've just got the results up here. Rob de Heiden won it in 2.16, Magnus was second in 2.17. Would that be about right?
That's That's about right. Yeah, and Treepy was probably third or fourth, I think.
Yeah, I think he was fifth on these ones with a couple of Japanese in there as well.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, some pretty amazing names in this list of people. We might put that in the show notes for people to look through in a different time. Yeah, Pat Carroll, 235, would that be right?
Yeah, I think Pat went in there injured that day.
Yep.
And, yeah, I remember going past Pat and saying something to him, trying to cheer him up. But obviously, yeah, he just said, I remember him whispering that there's something wrong with him, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But Pat's the sort of guy, he'll just guts it out and he'll finish no matter what.
Yeah, there you are, 232. 232, 30-second spot. There's some good runners running well off their best here, though. It must have been a tough course.
Yeah, it was a tough course, and I just remember that that Anzac Bridge Hill, I think it was, at sort of around 26, 27K, and I remember that seemed to take it out of me, and I got to the top of there, and I just seemed to be gone. It was almost like my race was over when I got to the top of that hill that day. But I think, yeah, there was obviously a lot of other people struggling that day apart from myself as well. So, yeah, went in there with sort of high expectations, but, yeah, probably would like to have run sort of probably, 3 minutes quicker.
Yeah, right. And then it's almost like you have another gap in your running results from 2000 through to, like, now, I guess, 2018.
Yeah, I did do the Gold Coast in 2006.
Yep.
And that was another one where I was probably slightly disappointed with it as well. I think I ran 2:45, low 2:45s, but deep down I wanted to go a bit quicker than that. So I probably finished that race, a tad disappointed and the same old thing where I'm pulling up sore for the next week and could hardly walk and the quads are giving it to me. And I've never been a good puller-upper of marathons. And that was just another one where just was feeling sad and sorry for myself for the following couple of weeks. And then... yeah, so 2006 to Noosa, 2018, another 12-year hiatus. And that had a lot to do with me being I've had a lot of injuries, Brady, in the last sort of 10, 11 years, going over on ankles and having arthroscopes on knees and had a bunion cut out and osteitis pubis. I've been there and done that, and I've had a lot of injuries and a lot of long-term injuries. And about sort of 15 months ago, I decided to get back into it again. And this has probably been my best run for quite some time. And obviously with this sub 3 hour marathons 40 years apart, that was always been my aim and goal for the last 9 months. And this one was a little bit different because I probably haven't trained as much for this one in terms of mileage. I purposely try to keep it below 100K, only because I'm getting older and just trying to nurse my body and trying to listen to my body more. And so I purposely try to keep all the Ks less than 100. I think I went to 102 one week, but all the other weeks were sort of, predominantly between sort of 80 to 95. And also I've only been doing sort of one speed session a week as well.
Yeah, so talk us about what's a week look like. I guess I'm not sure if we've told the listeners yet, but you did it. You ran 2:47:57, so you went well under 3 hours at the Noosa Marathon a couple of weeks ago. But that's a pretty good result off less than 100 k's a week.
It is, yeah. And the thing that amazed me in my training program this time was how good my Sunday morning runs were feeling. Because, let's face it, those Sunday morning runs are pretty key runs in your marathon training. And I was just like, for some reason, I just don't know, couldn't put a finger why I was feeling so strong and so good. Like I'd be running with my training partners. I'd get to 25K and would stop for a drink of water. And I'd stop and say to my training partners, I said, look, I've never been on performance enhancing drugs before, but I feel like I'm on them.
Yeah, right.
I get to 25K and just feel like I feel like I go for another 25K.
And when you're doing these runs, like what kind of pace and stuff are you going to kind of let the listeners know?
Oh, probably a lot of it was sort of around sort of 4:30 to 4:40.
Yep.
lot of it, but also I'd be running along with another training partner sometimes, and he'd go, oh, Gary, that last K was 4:15. And I'd go, geez, it didn't feel like it was 4:15. You know, so, and when that happens, it sort of sends good vibes through your head as well. So I was sort of bottling all this up as well, because I'm not joking, I've never felt so good on Sunday morning long runs before, and I just couldn't understand why I was feeling this way.
So we're doing a session on Saturday, or like we're going into them pretty fresh? Like there's got to be some reason why.
Yeah, I've sort of got a couple of training groups. So my Saturday training group is more of a social group. So my Saturday morning training run would only be, you know, like 11K at sort of, you know, 5 to 5:30 pace. So it was almost like a recovery run on Saturdays.
Yeah.
You know, running with a bunch of guys, you know, at that pace, no quicker than 5-minute Ks on a Saturday morning. But, you know, sometimes my Friday morning session would be a speed session, who I'd run with a good friend of mine, Jed. And I think Jed's getting a program off your mate, Julian.
Yeah, sure. Yep, certainly so, is.
I obviously haven't been following all of Jed's or Julian's training program, but I did a few Friday morning sessions with Jed, which would consist of a typical one would be, say, 10 minutes at 3:50 pace, and then 10 minutes like sort of jog recovery at 4:20.
Yeah.
And we do that.
And would you do some real like VO2 speed stuff, or you stay away from that to kind of protect the body a bit?
Look, I did do a few sessions by myself that would consist of I did a few sort of 1K sessions by myself where I would run probably around sort of 3:30 to 3:40 pace. With like a 1-minute recovery. And look, I'm one of these runners, Brady, who doesn't have a GPS watch either. So I would never, you know, exactly run 1K, but I'd sort of do it by my stopwatch type thing. So I'm one of these people that hasn't converted to a GPS watch yet. So I would probably flog myself a bit more during a training session by myself than I would, say, with company.
Yeah, and like some key sessions leading up to that 2:47 at Noosa, like were you doing any big marathon-specific sessions?
Look, I wouldn't really say so. No, it was just a culmination of, you know, they always say your preceding sort of 16 weeks is pretty key. And I've sort of built up from a very, like I say, I probably started 15 months ago. And this has been my slowest ever comeback ever in terms of just, you know, 20K a week and hold it for a few weeks, you know, sort of 25, 30K. And it's just been such a slow, gradual increase because I was so cautious and so wary this time. So it's just been such a gradual increase until I got up to, you know, and I've sort of held it at that sort of 80 to 90 for the sort of, you know, past sort of 4 to 5 months. So I've always had a good base. I've been really happy with the base and just really happy with those Sunday morning training sessions. And so I wouldn't say there's been any key weeks or key sessions at all, just a culmination of just maintaining that sort of, you know, 85 to 95K weeks.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that because some people think there's always these kind of, you know, special sessions you need to hit, but consistency is the key. Like if you just keep stringing together the weeks week after week, nothing kind of sexy in there. It just kind of comes together and that's when the good performances come from.
Yeah, exactly. And like I say, I just can't stress enough how important, I mean, we all know how important Sunday runs are, but just the fact that these were just feeling every Sunday, just continuously feeling great, feeling strong. And like I say, I just bottled that all up. And on the start line, that's all I was thinking about was all those Sunday morning training runs and how good they've been feeling. And when I got on the start line at Noosa, I just knew I was going to get a 4-minute Ks. Didn't really think that I could hold the 4-minute Ks, but that was the battle plan anyway, to go out 4-minute Ks and just hang on. And I was just thinking about like I say, how good I was feeling on all those Sunday mornings. And somebody texted me the night before and just said, look, Gary, just treat it like it's a an up-tempo Sunday morning run.
Yeah. How long did you go before Noosa? Like, what was your longest run?
Yeah, look, I probably did get up to 37, 38K in that 21 days before. So, yeah, I think I got up to 38K. There was obviously a few weeks in the low 30s as well. But, yeah, 38 was the max I got up to.
All right, tell us about Noosa now, because it wasn't always the plan. It was going to be Gold Coast where this attempt was going to happen.
It was. I was telling all my friends that, you know, because there was a certain ring to doing, you know, two sub-threes 40 years apart at the 40th Gold Coast Marathon.
Yeah.
It just had that nice ring to it as well. And so all my friends were knowing I was going to do Gold Coast, and there's probably some out there that probably still expecting me to be out there. but the ones that are closest to me, I told all them, I think I made the decision about 13 days before Noosa. So it was only like around about the 13th of May when I pulled up really lame with my knee after one of these Sunday morning runs, which did feel good, but just pulled up pretty lame with my knee. And that was the final straw. I thought, righto, Noosa in 13 days, forget about Gold Coast. And so I started my taper. And, yeah, so it all happened pretty quick. But, yeah, I sort of had no doubt that I was ready. And so it was taper mode. And I do find tapers very hard, just like a lot of the seasoned marathoners probably do, trying to hold yourself back, trying to not, you know, you don't want to leave the race on the course. So I was pretty conscious about you know, dropping the intensity, dropping the Ks. And, yeah, I think in my last week I only ran, don't quote me, but it was probably 40K.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then, like, come race morning, did you have a good pack to run with? Or I'm guessing, you know, if you're a guy who doesn't wear a GPS and stuff, you're maybe not taking on too many gels, or sports science isn't really your thing. Or what did like race day nutrition look like?
Well, yeah, gels have never really been my thing, but I did decide to take two gels in my back pocket. And one of my friends said, take one after 1 hour and take two after 2 hours, which I did on the day. I'd only taken one previously in training, so this is all pretty new to me. So I did take the gels, and yeah, look, the good thing was at Noosa, the half marathon went off at the same time, which I didn't mind at all, because I thought, well, you know, I should be able to latch on to a few 4 minute boys, and there was a 1:24 pacer as well. So I did latch on to the 1:24 pacer there for a while, but he seemed to drop off the pace. And then so I think there was only maybe a group of about three or four of us that decided to keep, you know, maintaining the pace that we were going at. And obviously by this stage I was actually going sort of sub 4 minute Ks. I think I went through the first two because there was K markers every 2K, which was easy because I could sort of go, you know, 8:16, you know.
Yeah.
Good that I didn't have to rattle my brain about, you know, the things and all the type of thing. There's nothing worse. So the fact that I was doing or trying to do the 4 minute Ks was good. But it got to the stage where 4 minute Ks were, must have been feeling a bit slow, because I just felt myself just getting quicker and quicker and quicker. And, you know, I was 15 seconds under and then 30 seconds under. And, you know, I just kept getting quicker and quicker and quicker. And in the end, I just thought I'm not even going to bother looking at the watch. And I remember going through halfway in 1:23:08, and I'd caught up a good female friend of mine, Krishna Stanton. I think I caught Krishna up just sort of before halfway, and yeah, I was just feeling so good at halfway. And I rounded the bend to go out for the third loop, and I decided to pick up the pace a bit. And my third loop, because it was like a 10.5k loop, we did a 10.5k loop four times, And so I picked up the pace on the third lap because I was feeling that good. And my third lap ended up being the quickest lap. And I was also conscious of a 10K race starting 2 hours after my race started. So I was conscious of the fact of a 10K race going off, me rounding, going out to do the last lap and having to mow down or push into a heap of 10K runners.
Yeah.
Alan Peacock told me before the race, he said, look, Gary, don't be scared about running on the opposite side of the road, which I did because I didn't want to push my way through, you know, the tail end of a 10K race. Mm. And so I'd started doing this. I ran for probably a good K on the opposite side of the road and some official said, mate, got to get over. So, look, I did get over when it sort of was thinning out a bit. So even though I'm a bit critical of those guys being out there, there was a stage where it was sort of okay because they thinned out and I was running people down.
Yeah, something to focus on.
I never really had that solitude feeling on the course because I was always sort of picking off the 10K guys in that latter half of the course when I really was starting to, you know, feel the pain because I think around about 33, 34, I was really starting to hurt. I was digging in, gritting the teeth. I could feel my knee lift getting lower. I could feel the quads getting sorer. But the fact that there was people out there and picking people off, it was, I think it was helping me a bit. And it probably wasn't until the last 2K where the wheels really did fall off, to be honest.
It's pretty good, though, to time it like that. Like, yeah, if you don't fall off at 40K, you kind of time it pretty much perfect.
Yeah, well, that's right. And I had, you know, so many minutes up my belt. Well, I shan't – yeah. Well, like I say, when I set off that day, I didn't really know what time I was going to do, but just going off at 4 minute Ks was the plan. And I think I would have been happy with about 252, 253, to be honest. That's what have been that's probably what would have been par for me that day, I think. And the fact that I did 247.57, I was stoked.
Yeah, I could imagine. Where'd that place you overall, Gary? Like, it would have been pretty high up, wouldn't it?
Yeah, look, I was fifth on the day overall.
Yeah.
It was a pretty tame, probably, field in the terms of, you know, there was no sort of prize money on offer. There was no great incentives type thing for anyone of any note to go out there. But, you know, that type of thing doesn't sort of gel with me these days anyway at my age and my pace. But I just wanted to go out there and, you know, do the 2 sub 3, 40 years apart. And I think a lot of my friends were really happy for me that I actually did a time that quick on the day because it obviously surprised me and it surprised a lot of my friends as well.
Yeah, like it's not like you just went out and played it safe and ran at 2:59.59 pace and kicked it home in the last K. Like you kind of put it on the line as well.
Yeah, that was never my intention because I sort of didn't want to go out at, you know, sort of 2:57, 2:58 pace and then maybe sort of blow up and do 3:02. So it was always my intention to go, you know, go out at a pace that was probably well under 3 and just hope that nothing disastrous happened. And like I say, the fact that I was feeling really stronger halfway and decided to pick up the pace after 21K, I think that third lap was the one that really sort of made it for me on the day. And another thing that really surprised me as well, I've never ever ran, I think I ran 141 slower for the second half, and I've never ever ran that quick, like positive split-wise. I've like always been, you know, maybe sort of 3, 3.5 minutes has been my best sort of positive split before. So the fact that I only ran 141 slower in the second half, I was really happy with that as well.
Yeah, pretty even stuff. What's next? Like, is the body feeling all right? You've picked off another goal. Can you share anything with us?
Look, there is a goal that I was looking at, but I'm not sure whether I'll be able to make it in terms of, you know, whether my body can hold up, my left knee, is it going to hold up? Yeah, I was just looking at all the age group records. A couple of weeks ago, and the 57 the 57 age record, Australian record, is exactly the same time that I ran at Noosa, 2:57.57.
Oh, you're kidding. You equaled it.
Out of all the age records, no disrespect to the person that holds it at all, no disrespect to him, but it's probably the softest record, one of the softest records, age records for the marathon, 2:47.57 as a 57-year-old. And I thought that might be within my, you know, grasps in 13 months' time.
Yeah, exciting stuff. Hey, Gary, because you've been around running for so long, and please don't find that disrespectful at all, but I'm wondering if, like, there must be so much that's changed in the sport since your, you know, you first started at 14 back in 1977.
Yeah, there is, and I think the thing that I've noticed is, like, the sport of triathlon has probably taken a lot of distance runners as well. I mean, obviously, triathlon was nowhere near as big when I was growing up in the 70s and 80s. I certainly think we have lost a lot of runners to the sport of triathlon. And, yeah, I don't know what it is, but I found sort of in that sort of 1986 period there, the running depth was probably a lot stronger. Like, I remember running a half marathon back in 1986, and there were so many guys in the field that broke, you know, say, like, that broke sort of 1:12, 1:13. You know, there were so many guys sort of running, you know, that fast way back then. And just, I don't know what it is, but there doesn't seem to be the depth now as what there was, say, 30 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I just don't know why that is. But to me, I don't know whether, you know, there's just a general lack of interest in running now as what there was back then. I just can't put a finger on it. But, maybe the depth has sort of dropped off. I'd hate to say it, but I think it has.
Yeah, well, there's probably more interest in the participation now, I guess. You would have seen so many more events pop up and numbers going up and up and up, whereas I'm sure when you ran your 2:59 at 15, you'd only really run a marathon or do a running race if you were a fair dinkum runner, wouldn't you?
Well, look, yeah, that's exactly right. But, yeah, I mean, running's been in my blood, you know, from a 12-year-old, and it's never going to get out of my system, I don't think, unless I'm in a wheelchair.
Yeah, so good. Well, thanks so much, Gary, for sharing those stories with us today. I'm sure the listeners have found that pretty inspirational that you've been, able to run so quick at 15 and then so quick at 55. And, is there anywhere we can keep updated? Obviously, your run's not on Strava or anything if you don't have a GPS watch, but if someone's out there wants to keep track of your progress, what's the best way to do it?
Well, maybe now I'm going to have to go out and buy a GPS watch. Yeah. I think the time has come for me to cross over and buy one.
Yeah, get on Strava, start chasing some course records and you'll be right.
Yeah, well, it's my birthday in a couple of weeks' time, so if anybody wants to buy me one.
Yeah, any Gary's family listening, feel free to buy him a GPS watch for his birthday.
Yeah, Gen 20 is not far away.
Thanks again for your time, Gary. We really appreciate it.
Okay, cheers, buddy. Thanks, mate.